You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
LeBron James, sexiest man alive, and virgins making news.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
The worst day to be horny is Sunday. The best day is a Friday and Saturday night.
Andy Dirt Johnson.
You want to close. Close. As in C-L-O-S-E. Not C-L-O-T-H-E-S.
And Brandon Sprague.
I love me a Spanish-speaking woman. I really, really, really do. I love it. Now, that ain't all you got to have. You know what I'm saying? You ain't got to have it, but I mean, it is a plus. A bilingual women's, specifically Spanish, whispering in your ear. It's a beautiful thing.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
The expectation is that you're going to be ready to step up and handle your business. That's her expectation, whether she tells you or not. Am I right, Solange? Amen. Amen.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. A sexy Stephen A. welcoming you in on a hump day.
Ah, Canada loves me when I come.
I thought we took that open out of the rotation.
No, it's still there. Back by popular demand. The listeners want Stephen A. opens.
I feel like it splits people. There's either like, oh, this is very weird and uncomfortable. And then there's the people, it's like, I can't believe a sports pundit's doing this on a podcast.
We're good. We just ain't real good.
Yeah, yeah. That about sums it up for us.
That's where we're at, man.
Happy Wednesday. If you missed the first hour, we debated how much people are going to watch the Blazers this year, a week away from the opening tip.
We did.
We talked about which judge would you choose on The Voice, Reba, Snoop, Gwen, or Buble.
That was a segment.
We debated if Cleveland's team name makes them less watchable.
Yeah, I'll give you the update on that. Let's see where the results are real quick.
We did have somebody respond that this is silly. This is a big part of their city history. And then I know the origins of it. I just think like you could have come up with a better name.
To that listener, 68% of our audience so far is saying yes, it lessens your excitement to watch them in the playoffs.
What was the Keanu Reeves scab movie? Football?
The replacements.
What was the team name?
Sentinels.
The Sentinels.
It's the same
Washington
vibe. It's like,
Sentinels. Washington Sentinels.
Yeah. It's the same kind of vibe.
See what
me.
Commanders gives off, too. It just sounds like a movie Hollywood team name.
It does. And we did NFL Zigger Zag. We got Josh Pate at 7:40, so we have a lot to get to before we talk with Josh Pate. I want to start the second hour. Do you believe a very, very, very bad defense can be turned around in 7 days?
In 7 days.
As a football guy. Jared Jones said, those guys on the radio don't know football.
Yeah.
Do you, as a football fan, but not a football knower, evidently.
No, I don't know. I know nothing about football.
Do you believe a very, very, very bad defense can be turned around in 7 days?
By the way, on that note, I would like to mention, remember my comments about throwing the ball down the field and offensive coordinator Dirt, what Oregon do on Saturday? What helped win them the game?
What
taking
did we
shots
find
down
out?
The field?
Okay, first of all, I love that you've already made this about Oregon again.
Sorry, my apologies.
Second of all, I actually, that was one of my big takeaways
for
to
the
spoil.
Next 2 months, so.
It was the video they sent out yesterday.
We got to take our shots. We got to take our shots.
That's all I kept thinking about.
I'm the guy in the last dance doing the shrug right now. I don't know anything about football. Take your shots, man. And they got a PI on one that should have held, but they called a stupid illegal man downfield penalty. A terrible defense turning it around in 7 days.
Do you believe it can happen?
I don't.
Only if they get all their dudes back.
Yeah,
and
I guess if everybody's
100%
hurt.
Healthy.
Okay.
But
there's a caveat on that.
Turning around, to what degree?
Well, Trent Bray was asked about this. Oregon State has a better opponent coming to their building this week after getting ran all over by Nevada.
They do.
And he was asked about the defensive turnaround from Nevada to UNLV in 1 week. Here was Trent Bray.
It's just what it is. The guys that go in there, they're on scholarship too, and they're here to do a job. And they got to go out there and do their job. And we just got to be disciplined in doing that work. It's not a talent thing. There were very few plays where Nevada player beat an Oregon State player. It was more self-inflicted, getting up the field when you're supposed to sit at the line, or things like that that create vertical seams in the run game that can't happen. So that's why I feel you can get it corrected. I don't see it being a talent basis.
I was happy to hear him say this, one, because he talked longer for than 10 seconds, usually every answer from him. He's getting better at that, and so I appreciate that. But the part that stuck out in that clip, it's not a talent thing. And that's interesting to me, because we noted on Monday's show how decimated with injury they are, and it's not that he doesn't think the guys that are out aren't talented. It's that the head coach is basically saying, we don't have a talent problem. We have a assignment problem. Yeah. And so he thinks that you got scholarship athletes going out there, could turn this around. They just need to be better on their assignments. This isn't a talent problem.
Yeah, I feel like that's he's stuck between a rock and a hard place, and what do you want him to say? We suck and all of our defense is out, so we're not going to be able to stop anything. That's not really going to get fans excited and want to buy tickets.
Well, but to say it's not a talent thing is not something you have to include in that answer.
You know what I'm thinking of?
Remember
when Oregon played Georgia in the opening game of the season?
Okay.
And remember what Kirby Smart said about Oregon and Dan Lanning?
Yeah.
He's like, he doesn't have, I mean, what do you want him to do here? Right? Like, just, they can't
basically
hang with
said,
us.
Your team sucks.
Your team sucks. He'll get there, but your team sucks and they're not at that point yet. That's what an opposing coach should say right now. You're out 17 players on defense and you're too deep and you're going to pretend like this isn't a talent issue. Depth was always the concern at Oregon State. They lost half their damn roster last season. They've tried to plug and play. They've been fine at times this year, but when you lose guys to that volume, you just don't have the... You were playing a tight end, a defensive end, and you're telling me that this isn't a talent problem? By the way, look at UNLV and what they've done running the football this year. They are averaging 262 rushing yards a game. The only team in the Mountain West that runs the ball more efficiently than them is, I know, shocking, Boise State, who has the best running back we've ever seen in college football. I know that that's going to piss people off, but he's a stud. He's awesome, and Ashton Gentry's one of the best.
Wait,
this year.
Why would that piss people off?
Come on. You got to go back to Barry Sanders and Thurman Thomas, and you got to, I mean, if you say best of all time, it upsets
people.
There's
like 12 teams that have more rushing yards than Ashton Jaynty in America.
It's wild. They ran last week, UNLV last week against Utah State ran for 313 yards and nearly 7 yards a carry and three touchdowns. They had runs of 62, 33, 43. They are explosive on the ground. Their quarterback is a dynamic athlete. He had 55 rushing yards himself.
They have like, five players that have gotten 100 yards in a game. Five
this
players.
Is their strength.
And do you know what else they're good at? Explosives.
Yes.
They're third in the country with 30-plus yard plays. Third in the nation.
Yeah.
The Cougs are second. Trent Bray was also asked about, hey, man, your defense looked a little helpless. Do they need it? Are you going to step in? You were the former defensive coordinator of this program, but now you're the head coach. Are you going to step in and help coach the defense this week to get ready for UNLV? Here's what he had to say.
You know, being half in and half out, doesn't work. I trust Keith. I trust the defensive staff. They're gonna, fix those problems. I have total faith in them. And and I'm always helping, making comments, and helping out. So I'm always involved in both sides of the ball. But I don't feel micromanaging to a certain degree. I think can be actually more harmful.
So he doesn't want to step in to a lot of those meetings and, make it feel like he's taking over as a pseudo DC.
It's a tough spot for a head coach to be in. We just kind of went through this with the Jets and their offense and taking away play calling rights and the awkward nature and tension that it creates. He definitely has a hand in what they do defensively. He definitely is in on those meetings, and he has a say in how he wants things to look as a head coach. He gets the final say in a lot of this stuff. But I do see his point, and I do appreciate him not throwing his defensive coordinator under the bus because, again, back to the original point, I don't care who is Nick Saban. If you pick anybody you want to be your defensive coordinator, you're playing tight ends at defensive end. What do you want them to do? I didn't realize that the injuries
were
that bad. Well,
Alfieri did go into college as a defensive player.
I know that. He's also now a tight end, so they moved him positions. He doesn't practice day in and day out as a defensive end. That was not. If I said in August you're going to play a backup tight end at defensive end, how do you think your run defense is going to be? We're going to be terrible. Yeah. So this is like. Again, he can say all he wants that this isn't a talent issue. This is just a scheme and fitting the gap and, you know, assignment football and doing your 111, all the coach speak stuff, which is vitally important when playing defensive football, because if one guy's out of position, that creates an explosive run. I don't know what you want them to do when you're down to five guys left of your two deep in your top 22 on defense. Maybe they get a bunch of guys back. It doesn't sound like everybody's going to be out for the year. A chunk of them will be, but they're hopeful some of those guys will return. And so maybe we see a slightly better run defense this weekend because of that. But I appreciate not throwing your DC under the bus when I don't know what you want him to do with that many injuries.
Well, I think the thing about the injuries is, and he did say that he's expecting some guys to be back, that not all those dudes are season ending, to your point. We just don't know who they are because he doesn't want to name names, but it's all about what they do in practice this week. That being said, I'm also not going to pretend that the run defense hasn't been questionable the last, 4 weeks.
Totally fair. It has been. It was started against Oregon a little bit, maybe before that too. San Diego State ran it okay, if I remember correctly.
San Diego State's running back is a pretty good. He's the only good player they have on offense. So he had a nice little game for himself. We know what Oregon did. Colorado State came in and just bulldozed you all around the field, and just watched what Nevada did. So I'm also not going to pretend the run defense hasn't been a little shaky for most of the year. I guess the hard thing to parse out here for the Beavs would be, I don't know how much of an impact some of those guys will make when they return.
Totally fair, especially considering the opponent you're playing this weekend. If this was, Utah State, maybe you're saying, all right, that'll make the difference. You're playing Boise State might end up winning the conference because they have the best player in the conference. I think you're playing the most complete team, potentially, and maybe that's unfair to Boise State, but UNLV's looked really good, and losing their quarterback has affected them in zero way, shape, or form.
I would argue they may have gotten better.
And the other side of this, too, is that their rush defense, UNLV's, is number one in the conference. They're the only team in the conference that's giving up fewer than 100 rushing yards a game as a team.
Well, in their conference, we're not in that conference.
That is true, in their conference.
We're
and that is
conference.
That is true, and that's what Oregon State's going to want to do, because their quarterback threw four picks last week. They want to run the football, and you're facing the best run defense in the conference. So I think your hope this weekend is, one, guys get back healthy on defense, but two, it's night game at Reser Magic. They're a different team sometimes at home. They pull off games like this when you don't see it coming, and that's the hope that you have.
I want to say, for the record, the way you just ended that is kind of sad to me, because you're right. They do pull off magic at home at night. When they play USC, they're playing UNLV.
Did you in there? You got that going for you.
Josh Pate will join the program at 7:40. Coming up next, the reaction to something that happened in Eugene this weekend, and duck porn was released. Next on The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Got a lot of things to ask Josh Pate. Can he differentiate volumes of crowd noise after a certain point? And also, UNLV is coming Corvallis. How he's monitoring the non-group of four best teams. Boise State has been playing really well.
They will get an AQ, whoever ends up being the highest ranked team.
Yep, UNLV is in this. Obviously, we talked about Army-Navy and what they've been this year. So we'll ask Josh Pate about that and some other college football things. We got a big weekend. We've got Georgia at Texas. We've got Bama at Tennessee.
We get UNLV Boise State, by the way, next week. So it could be a look-ahead spot for the Rebels this weekend.
There you go.
It's a big game for them.
Don't forget the huge game of the week right here on The Fan on Friday. Oregon at Purdue.
Friday Night Lights. I remember Oregon playing at Purdue in 2008, I want to say. Down big, came back, won in overtime.
Mm.
Took that stupid drum and pushed it out of the stadium.
There you go.
There you go.
We beat Purdue pretty easily.
You did.
So
they made a change of quarterback, though. You never know. They got a backup playing now.
Didn't he get hurt, Card? Or they?
I don't know.
I think he got hurt.
Okay.
That and then they fired an OC.
Well,
since
they changed their OC, too.
They did. They hung, 40 points on Illinois last week? They're feisty.
49.
49. Almost a 50-burger?
They went for the win.
Almost a 50-burger?
They went for a 2-point win.
We're a little scared right now.
So we get to Josh Pate coming up at 7:40. The NCAA has responded to Dan Lanning acknowledging publicly that, yes, he indeed did manipulate the 12-man rule.
Yes.
I read the rule book.
You did?
No. Dan said.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I read the rule book.
Yeah, I saw it.
Underrated part, and I know I want to give a lot of credit. What Oregon's video team does is remarkable. It's pro sport level. The only little thing, and I don't think they were able to do it because they wanted such a quick turnaround, was highlighting that 12-man penalty thing. But again, I don't think they had the time for it. All that film, they had to break it down and condense it.
That was not, they didn't have any of that communication. That might have been a thing from Lanning, too, of saying, like, let's not put that in there. If they were talking about that on the sidelines of, like, let's not throw that in the movie.
Why would he say that, though, and then publicly acknowledge that, yes, he indeed manipulated the situation? Yeah.
I also think, and maybe I'm wrong on this, I also feel like that they would have, whether he said that or not on Monday night, I think this would have been a rule change. This was getting so discussed nationally.
You think if Lanning says basically like, no, I
or just no comment or whatever, I think they still would have changed the rule. Because this had kind of caught in fire over the last couple of days, and it was getting talked about from, you know, wall to wall in this country. And I think they would have looked at it and said that does, whether he did it on purpose or not, that's kind of a dumb thing that's allowed to be able to do. And we should probably change that rule.
I have shouldn't be surprised, but the amount of Ohio State coping on Twitter last 2 days, parsing out this second and that second, and we should have had 7 and 8, not 6, and the coping is not going well in Columbus, Ohio.
Which is funny, because I'm sure that I would have been in the same spot. If they slide 2 seconds earlier and kick a game-winning field goal, I'm sure there's coping that happens in our fan base, and we're freaking out, and Lanning still can't win the big one, and we're right where they are, which is why it was such an important game. The rational mind should tell you, Ohio State's one of the best teams in the country. They had to go on the road in this game. They very easily could have won. It was a coin flip game. They very easily could have won. And they have one of the most talented rosters in the sport. They're not going anywhere. They will be in the mix the rest of the season. It's one of those where you love it because the reaction is still so strong, and that's what we love about college football, that it hasn't lessened the regular season at all. But you do have to, at times, like, take a step back and remind yourself of, like, that's right, we're 6 games in. They got Penn State on the road in a likely wideout game in 2 weeks.
But if they lose to Penn State,
then it's different.
Penn
sure.
Penn State owns the path
tiebreaker,
to the tie.
No doubt about it. But if they go in and win that game by 14, which I wouldn't be surprised at all by, are we?
I was actually surprised. I thought just Oregon and Ohio State would flip spots. I thought they'd keep Ohio State in third.
Ahead of Penn State?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the JP poll, the power rating poll that Pate puts out, it got people hot and bothered yesterday.
Which is also dumb, because it's about neutral field, neutral site favorability.
Vegas odds,
he reached out to FanDuel to say if Oregon and Ohio State played in Indianapolis next week in the Big Ten championship game, what would the line be? FanDuel told him it'd be Ohio State -2.5, which
I know it sounds crazy because the Ducks won. I think it's kind of right.
Yes.
I thought that the Ducks versus them thing they sent out, that video, I watched all 19 minutes of it. It was not porn for me, but I think everybody that wears green and gold
I had a full body boner for 2 weeks.
I think there were some weird feelings going on there of sports. A
lot of quacking.
Yes, very well put. A lot of quacking. And one thing that stuck out to me, look, getting a win, I think his reaction was part I finally got that win, even though I've only been a head coach for 3 years. I also think there's a little bit of this, and this isn't meant as a shot. Ohio State has probably the most talented roster in college football. Everybody said that since the preseason and in the regular. And I think part of that was Lanning saying, like, I got my guys to believe,
yeah,
fight just enough, and we just barely, yeah, narrowly won that game. Oh, my God. Look at us. We can do it. Take down the team that has the talent.
The win was more important for the Ducks than the loss was devastating to Ohio State.
Don't tell Buckeye fan that.
Well, yeah, Buckeye fan disagrees, but I think that's a valid point.
I think that's, yeah, a good point, too.
And this is the reality. It's the same as Georgia-Bama. Like, it's, you lose a regular season game, it's heartbreaking. You don't want to lose it, but you still have everything in front of you to play for. That's just the reality of the 12-team playoff that we're dealing with. I think one of the he was so excited because he need, I mean, just to get one of these, to just have a marquee win under his belt.
You have to have guys know it and feel, yes, it and see it.
There's
and,
a belief now, yeah, in that locker room that we, right, can go toe-to-toe with anybody that we play and we can beat them.
Mm-hmm.
And the other aspect that stood out to me in the documentary, and I talked about it on Monday, the what made me feel so good, not just that they won the game, was that they weren't their best. Like, there was the idea maybe coming in that Ohio State is so good that, do you have to play a perfect game to win this? Like, do you have to be, can't make a mistake and no penalties and can't miss red zone opportunities and you can't, like, all everything has to align for you to win this game. That was some of the thought going in. And one of the opening scenes of that last night that they came out with, it was Lanning sitting with his coaches saying, guys, like, our good is good enough. We don't have to do anything above and beyond what we've done this year. If we just play good football and stick to our game plan, we can win this game. Yeah. And that ended up bearing
they
out on Saturday.
Perfect. They just made less mistakes.
They
than
made
Ohio
less
State.
Mistakes.
Well,
yes.
Let me ask you that, because I never bought that. Did you buy that?
That they had to be at their best to beat them?
Yeah. Because I had seen, I mean, I've been noting it on the show for that reason, is Ohio State was not playing perfect football all year.
No.
Their outcomes and their final scores, I didn't think indicated the games that they were playing. Now, I wouldn't say, like, Oregon could make all these mistakes and win. I didn't think Oregon had to play perfect to beat Ohio State. Did you buy that?
I didn't feel perfect, but I talked about this Monday. If you told me a clump of the mistakes that they made and you told me they were going to make those on Friday, I would have told you they would lose the game.
What if I told you the Ohio State mistakes?
Well, that's the other caveat.
Will
they
Howard
made a ton of mistakes
as well.
Yeah.
Dropping an easy snap that...
Yes.
Man, that drive is probably the most underrated drive of the game.
Yeah, they had the lead in the game. They
and
got the goal line stop.
And they,
yeah,
get out of the goal line and they start and they score. You're like, oh, now they're up 13.
Yeah, he flubbed the snap.
He flubbed the snap. He dropped it. It's 4th and 15. Here's a, yeah, punt. Ball back to Oregon.
Yeah, the other side of it, though, would be that what has killed Oregon in these big games in the last 2 years that they've lost is they've left points on the field and they haven't been able to finish drives or go for it on fourth down, all that kind of stuff. They left a lot of points on the field on Saturday night. And that was the thing that if you told me they did going in, I would say that they wouldn't be able to win the game. But just knowing that our good is good enough, I think, is a great confidence booster for that locker room.
At what point did he come down from that high, and how much did his head hurt, Dan Lanning? Because I watched that, and I'm like, you scream that much, you're that intense?
Sunday morning, that's a headache.
That come down is that's like, a, yeah, oh man, I need water, I gotta hydrate. Yeah.
That's like waking up from a bad night of drinking, man.
Yeah.
You wake up Sunday morning, and buddy, that hurts.
Tank top Lanning.
Wife beater Lanning, man. He's out there.
Tank tops.
He's got the tank top.
Tank
on.
Tops.
FIBU. Get your FIBU t-shirts.
FIBU stands for what again?
We love everybody.
What?
I can't say it on the air.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Bleep everybody but us.
Yeah, that's
what it
right.
means.
All right.
That's
FIBU
what it stands
is. FIBU,
for.
FIBU, that's yes. right. Josh Pate will join us at 7:40. Dirt and Sprague back with more.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure?
Don't sit here and act like there's no... We get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. With memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
Hey, crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Memberships as low as $9.99 a month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, online at crunch.com. Josh Pate, the commissioner of college football, coming up in 6 minutes. Got a chance to see him on Saturday down at Autzen. Excited to hear his thoughts and recap, and that is coming up in a few moments. Can anybody explain to me why Russell Wilson would start this Sunday?
Fields hasn't really been that good.
No, he hasn't.
They've won. They won against the Raiders. He wasn't great.
No, he wasn't. He has not been very good.
So I think the thinking from Tomlin would be...
Did we watch the Broncos last year?
We did.
Okay.
We have a new OC.
Okay.
We have a different OC than the Broncos had.
Do.
Look, I'm not a fan of it. I've been saying since the summer, just play Fields. He's younger. He's better. You know, if anybody's going to get away with this, of course it's going to be Mike Tomlin.
They're going to win the game 10-9.
9-8, and he's going to win this game, and Russ is going to be talked about because he threw for 135 yards and a touchdown, and,
right.
Oh, I look so much better. We know what this is going to be. And I like Mike. I actually like Mike Tomlin, right? I have a bet against him this year, so the sum of where this is coming from. No other franchise and coach could get away with this. No. This would sink a season.
It would.
It's quite literally sinking the Raiders.
Yeah.
And I know Justin Fields and Russ probably better than Minshew and O'Connell.
Yeah.
My point is when you play this like, he's not my quarterback, but he's my quarterback now, but I might play the other guy. Okay, that guy's not that good. I'm going to go back to the other guy. He's going to go back to Fields. We know how this is going to go.
Yeah.
He is the only one that can get away with this. And it's largely because TJ Watt's been a decoy.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, he had 145 passing yards in a 20-point win over the Raiders last week.
They won that game because of Najee Harris.
They ran the ball.
O'Connell was the Raiders quarterback.
And their defense is outstanding. I don't get it, man. I know this is getting talked about. But we'll see if it ends up happening. They play Sunday night against the Jets. Let's get to the commissioner of college football, Josh Pate, one of my favorite segments of the week. He is next on 1080 The Fam. All right, welcome back in. Hope your Wednesdays are going great.
I'm glad you remembered.
I remembered. I know. I've been trying to do wrestling music for Peyton. I kept forgetting.
This is a big deal to you.
This is a big deal. He's a wrestling guy. We were wrestling guys when we were kids. So, you know, you want to have the synergy there. Got a chance to see him this weekend. And seeing Pate in person, it's a big deal. He's like a presidential candidate.
Yeah,
man.
You said you were nervous to say hi.
Everybody's around him. He's got wads of big league chew in. Oh, yeah. He's hanging with the bussing with the boys guys. You got to kind of wait in line to go get close to him. It's
a
whole thing.
Also wearing shades, which like, are you cool enough to come talk to me?
Because
right now I'm cooler than you.
I'm definitely not cool enough to talk to the commissioner of college football, but we are cool enough to talk to him every Wednesday on the show. Josh Pate, CFB. Josh Pate's college football show every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, 5 o'clock on YouTube. Check the podcast wherever you get it. We asked you, Pate, last week, are you ready for what Autzen was going to bring? And we'll get to how you've pissed off the rest of the country on your comments on this. Just your thoughts and what a game Saturday night at Autzen.
I have been looking forward to this radio hit where we can just slobber all over that game Saturday since its conclusion. It was wonderful. It was magnificent. Dare I say, it was life-changing, and you know how rarely I delve into the hyperbolic.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can fully appreciate the flack that I've taken for committing the crime of telling the truth to the rest of the country about Autzen Stadium, but I have done that. I will embrace the hostile college football public if that's what it takes to properly convey what we all experienced up there last Saturday. And, oh, by the way, Oregon won a pretty big game as well.
Yeah.
I want to ask you very quickly, because you went to Washington, Oregon last year, and you had talked about how loud Husky Stadium got, especially on those fourth down moments. How do you, because I said Monday, I can't parse out noise past a certain point. Eventually my ears are ringing, it's all loud, I don't know how to differentiate it. Can you do that? Can you hear a difference past a certain point and say, no, Autzen is indeed the loudest Big Ten venue?
Well, I know that you have recency bias, so the most recent sounds the most loud or loudest. That game at Husky Stadium last year was wild. I think the difference with this one this past Saturday is there was a moment there. There were a couple of sequences where there were multiple false starts followed by positive plays for Oregon, and that works a crowd into an absolute frenzy. And so at that moment, I don't know what in the world people are doing with decibel readings. Because I trust a scoreboard decibel reading like I trust the National Enquirer in a checkout line. So I could not care less about decibel readings. But if we were keeping them officially, yeah, that moment I felt like Oregon peaked more so than Washington did. But that's not to take away anything from that place, because Washington was insanely loud, as any Oregon fan who made that trip knows.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I made that comment on Monday. It felt like that drive, maybe third one of the game for Ohio State. They had those false starts, the delay of game on the punt. It felt like that was the moment that some of the volume peaked, obviously, until near the end of the game. Now, you've been getting it from all over the country by saying a place you've been is loud to people who have not been to that place, which I have found quite funny. I did want to ask, though, Now I know that the JP poll is a poll. It's not a power rating. It's not a ranking. How have my brethren in the state of Oregon handled what you did last night and your latest JP poll?
Well, let's get it clear now. I didn't do anything. The computer
did. It's true. Very true.
I just delivered the news. You know, right. I don't take the blame. I just take the credit.
Yeah.
So it's very simple. It's not really all that controversial. Good luck telling the comment section that. If I'm ranking teams, Oregon's ahead of Ohio State today. But if I'm power rating them, if I'm doing nothing more than gauging neutral field favorability, it's as easy as me calling FanDuel and asking them what the game would be today on the neutral field. And they told me, we would put Ohio State as a 2.5-point favorite today. Well, that's the end of that. I put Ohio State above Oregon. That's the difference in a power rating and a ranking. Now, how have our friends in Northwest, in Oregon, taken it? They've taken it fine because they almost don't even care. I don't think I got – I don't even remember any negative comments on it. They basically said, yeah, we get it. We just beat them on the field. We'll okay. do it again. We're fine with it. We're good. I mean, we beat them having lost Birch moments before the game, seemingly, so we'll be all right. Thanks okay. thanks for coming.
Lanning was in the video that Oregon sent out yesterday, obviously fired up. You saw it in person post-game. It clearly looked like a guy that wanted that win, not only for himself, but, you know, to help his team believe. I could ask you about Oregon, but I actually want to ask you the other side of that. Ohio State came in as the favorite. They came in largely regarded as maybe the best roster in college football. What surprised you about what Ohio State could not do or how they looked on Saturday against Oregon?
Well, it's the second part. It's not what they couldn't do because they ran the ball for 120 in the first half, and then they really got away from it, and they got away from it to the tune of 19 yards rushing in the second half. Now, a lot of that has to do with Oregon. I'm not trying to take anything away from Oregon, but also just the way the game was called in the second half was more indicative of what you would do if you were playing catch-up. And Ohio State was not playing catch-up. In fact, for a vast majority of the second half, they had the lead, and it was always a one-possession game. This was never a two-possession game at any point, I don't think. So that surprised me. And then the other part is there was no – in these kind of games, there's no knockout blow. It's just the cumulative effect of small wins here and there. Dan Lanning talked about jabs after the game. I was sitting there in team meetings with him Friday. That's all they talked about is we don't need haymakers. Our jabs are good enough. We don't need to do anything extraordinary. Who we are is good enough. And Ohio State believed the same thing. And so it's not any one decided advantage. No one dominated the game one way or another. But it did surprise me that Oregon – was the team that owned it more on the line of scrimmage, because that is very much in the wheelhouse of what Ohio State should be able to have and should be able to travel with. And you know what? If they play the game again, maybe it's different, but I don't know that they'll play the game again. I just know what I watched Saturday night. So those things maybe mildly surprised me.
Interesting. We're talking with Josh Pate. Josh Pate's College Football Show every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, 5 o'clock live on YouTube. You can check the podcast wherever you can find it. He is a defender of Autzen Stadium. For that, we will always love him. He's the commissioner of the sport, and we get to talk to him every Wednesday at 7:40. You got into something, Pate, on your show Sunday that was an interesting note that I hadn't really thought about going into the game as a positive for Oregon, and I'm as a honk as you can get. The coaching advantage in terms of assistance, it felt like there was a strong advantage for Ohio State coming into this game. You got Chip Kelly, what he's meant to offensive football, Jim Knowles, and that's supposed to be the guy that's going to solve all their woes at Ohio State. Like, it felt like at a coordinator spot, they had a major advantage. You kind of went into that Sunday about how you didn't feel like they won that, and maybe Oregon had the coaching advantage going in. How big is that for Dan Lanning? I mean, this win is obviously massive, but in that kind of matchup, thinking that Ohio State almost has three head coaches, and then you have on Oregon's sideline Tosh Sapoy, who's mainly known as a good recruiter and a guy who faked injuries back in the day against Oregon, and Will Stein's kind of an unknown nationally. How big of a surprise was that to you?
It was a pretty mild surprise, I can tell you, to a lot of people in the coaching world and in the agent world and the coaching search firm world. It was a pretty big surprise. Like, they thought that one of the big edges Ohio State had here, and they're not wrong to believe this, is that the cumulative experience on the Ohio State side, having Chip Kelly as an OC, having Jim Knowles, I mean, completely gray hair as a defensive coordinator, and then Ryan Day as the head coach, they thought that was going to be a big advantage there. And, I mean, you look at the way that game matched up. What a night for Tosh Lupoi. Like, what a resume game for him. What a resume game for Will Stein. And then the Dan Lanning, Ryan Day thing, that's what gets the headlines, but it's really the way they've staffed and it's the way that they've put their organization together. That's where a head coach's merit is reflected on game day. And then you'll have some decisions that get made, some clock management stuff, but I was really more focused on the support staffers. Well, that's an area that I'm telling you, a lot of folks expected Ohio State to have the edge in, and they did not.
You know, sometimes you need to see a game happen, I think, to get a good feel of it. You've watched all of the college football. You go to great venues every weekend. I know you believe in Oregon. You picked Oregon to win this game this past weekend. I'm just curious, as somebody who has seen a lot of these teams in person, 3 years ago, Oregon got their teeth kicked in by Georgia. They were not close to that level of talent. Has Oregon made that leap enough for you to say they can beat anybody in America on any given Saturday in any playoff game?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, if they played Georgia again today, that would be a complete dogfight game. I don't care where they play it. So the gap's never as big as it looks. We score in threes and sevens in this sport. So you can have some areas that you fall short in magnified, and you end up losing the game by 50, and it's just you think you'll never get there. Well, that's really not how wide the gap is. The gap is as big as recruiting a couple of good classes, making a couple of staff changes, and then whatever happens on the other side of the country happens, and all of a sudden you're there. I'll tell you, one of the great testaments of that is Brent Venables, year one at Oklahoma, gets beat by Texas by 50, and the very next year they beat him outright. So, I mean, what changed? Did 50 points worth of team change? No, it's just the way the sport works. So it's the same with Oregon right now. And then the other part of that is, it's ironic I just mentioned the Red River game, because Dylan Gabriel played his best game against Texas last year, and lo and behold, in his biggest moment this year, he's played his best game so far. Evan Stewart, same way, steps up as big as he's stepped up all year. And what you'll notice about these big-time programs is that age-old adage that gets way overused, even though it's true, is the big-time player stepping up in the biggest moments. Well, that happens with the best teams. So if that is a hallmark of Oregon football, then I can reliably sort of extrapolate that forward. I can rely on them being 110% of their performance level in the biggest moments. And if I can rely on that, Oregon's good enough to play with and beat probably anyone in the country on any given Saturday.
Yeah, that was something going into the game that gave me some confidence, was Gabriel and his performances in big games and kind of throwing some of those dud interceptions out, and he was outstanding on Saturday night. Now, you love 2007. We love 2007. It was a fever dream for anybody that was alive and remembers. It was my freshman year of college and just an incredible year. Oregon was one of the teams that got to number two before Dennis Dixon's knee snapped in half. We have hoped that maybe we could have another year like that in the sport. Feels like maybe we're trending on that this year, where Georgia's shown a vulnerability. Alabama, hell, Oregon, for as good as that win was, they barely beat Idaho and Boise in the first 2 weeks of the season. You have to have, and you've argued this, you can't have an elite team in order to have a 2007. Does Texas doing what you think they're going to do this weekend erase that narrative and they are the elite team?
It would, if they do what I think they're going to do. And for the uninformed portions of the audience, I think Texas is going to beat and handle Georgia. That's what I think they're going to do. Now, as you guys know, there has been a time or two throughout recorded history where I've been wrong. So if I'm wrong on this and Georgia goes in there and wins, we are in a world immediately where every team has looked vulnerable and most of them have a loss. Bama plays Tennessee this weekend. You got Georgia, Texas. We just had Ohio State, Oregon, which is a beautiful thing because we're knocking all these big-time versus big-time matchups out early in October and mid-October. So by Halloween, we may have abject chaos, which is very Halloweenish if you think about it. So I think that Georgia-Texas game is really big because it goes from us feeling like a bunch of chaos funneling towards an inevitable result to a bunch of chaos funneling towards who knows what. That's the difference in having an elite team versus not having any.
I know the game isn't necessarily on the radar of some of those big games, Bama, Tennessee, Georgia, Texas, but the AQ spot, Boise's having a nice run here. They damn near beat Oregon. JT looks like he's going to break every record and at least be in New York as a Heisman finalist. UNLV lost a very close game against Syracuse a couple weeks back, but they've continued rolling even without their quarterback. They're coming to Corvallis. The Beavs just got ran all over by Nevada. I'm curious, are you keeping an eye on these AQ teams, these teams, the Army Navies who are undefeated, the teams that will potentially find their way in the playoff and may be in an upset spot? Are you following what they're doing this season, and will you be following what they're doing this weekend?
Big time. And I'll tell you what's on the horizon, not to play look ahead, but I can afford to do it because all I have to do is talk for a living. There is a game next Friday night in Las Vegas. It's Boise and UNLV. And if you have UNLV able to get that win this weekend, you are going to probably set up a situation where the Friday night game is maybe the G5 game of the year. And it could be, in fact, it will be, that the team that emerges from that one would probably be, in that scenario, the favorite to make it as the G5 AQ. So, and there's a lot of acronyms in college football these days, I just realized. So I'm looking forward to that one because also I've gone to a G5 game once in my entire tour history, and that was UCF at Tulane a couple of years ago, but never a Friday night game. And all I can tell you is, it's on the radar for next weekend. That's all I can say right now.
That is a fun matchup. A little Friday night weekend in Vegas.
I think Pate just wants Vegas.
Who can say no to Las Vegas, man? Josh Pate, he's the commissioner of the sport. Catch his show, the Josh Pate College Football Show, every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, 5 o'clock on YouTube. Check the podcast wherever you find it. Great to see you this weekend, man. Thanks for the wonderful comments about Autzen and spreading the word of our great stadium and program across the country. We always enjoy the time and can't wait to catch up with you again next Wednesday.
I appreciate it, guys.
There you go. Josh Pate, the commissioner of the sport.
He is right in the sense of they play by sevens and threes. What I would also add to that, though, everybody, including yourself, noted that when they were playing Georgia, Georgia got on the field and it was an immediate, oh, that's an NFL team and we're not yet. And so, like, I hear him about the score stuff and how it can be different year to year. I think what he highlighted and what we talked about on Monday, where did you win the matchup? In the trenches. Where do you almost, in Oregon's history of being great and elite, where do they almost never win the matchup? In the trenches. And so I understand 49-3 is not maybe representative of the difference, but you noted it in person during that game. And now fast forward a couple years later, and you're handling Ohio State on the lines of scrimmage.
Walking around on the field Saturday before the game, Ohio State's massive. That is a massive football team. You didn't have that feeling. And that was the one thing walking around where I felt like that was going to be the case, but you're always just curious. You size up when they get off the bus. How big do they look and how intimidating are they? And walking around, maybe a slight size advantage for Ohio State, but it clearly didn't show up on the field. And that was the warming of the heart feeling of like, okay, we're there and you can hang in the biggest spots.
Texas handling Georgia?
He loves Texas this weekend.
He loves Texas in general. I think he picked them
in
the
Austin.
SEC.
Georgia's got to go back on the road. Clunker in Tuscaloosa a couple of weeks ago.
We'll see.
At Doughton Kirby.
This is a big game for Sark.
It's a big game for Sark. It's a big game for Kirby, too. It'd be a two-loss team.
You're right. Probably eliminates them.
Well, I mean, they're not eliminated.
I would say from the SEC title game, but some of these other teams, like Ole Miss, just lost their second game.
Ole Miss has two losses.
I think Bama's potentially going to lose this weekend.
Bama's on the road to Tennessee. They could have two losses already, so it's a big one for Kirby as well early on in the season. And it's going to be the SEC gets the spotlight this weekend. There's no doubt about that. We got a lot to get to in the final hour of the show. Is this troll worth it? I want to ask that question. I'm going to play Flip It or Stick It with some preseason stuff. We'll do that in the final hour. It's loaded. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Spraying on 1080 The Fan.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.